have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
This is Bruce Kaplan, welcoming you to a brand new radio station, Valley Community Radio 103.1 FM on your radio dial, where each week you'll hear the best of the best of radio. Tonight, we're going to bring you the best of old-time radio masterpieces. And every week on my show, we'll do the same thing. Remember, that's Valley Community Radio 103.1 FM on your radio dial.
City with its Frank Park Avenue. You can have your gilded mansion in Westchester. You can have your own cabana in Miami or Havana, where the blue bloods congregate for the siesta. You can have your fancy penthouse on some 42nd floor, but I'll guarantee wherever you may roam, with the tinsel and the glitter, why, those places can't compare with the humble little spot I call my home. It's a little western town called Beverly Hills, where people live a life that's free from care. No one struggles to be great. All they ask is an even break. They're satisfied to just be millionaires. Every housewife is contented with her lot, and some of them don't even own a yacht. She may have just one swimming pool, one husband to caress her. She's bored to death with foreign cars, and diamonds just depress her. She'd rather have some trinket like that oyster on her dresser, in that little western town called Beverly Hills. In that little western town called Beverly Hills. You're welcome as the flowers that bloom in May. No one cares about your caste or inquires about your past. If you only have one butler, that's okay. The children ring your bell on Halloween, then beat it in a chauffeured limousine. Each mother with her little son entrusted to her care will gently rock his cradle as she offers up a prayer that someday he'll be president of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. In that little western town called Beverly Hills, near Pasadena, that little western town called Beverly Hills.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces on the wonderful station Valley Community Radio 103.1 FM. We're a new show, but we're really an old show. What we try to do is kind of play a mix of old-time radio songs and the best mysteries of yesterday. Tonight will be no exception. We're going to begin with a great actor by the name of Glenn Ford in a great mystery from the suspense series, and then we're going to continue on to what's another one of my favorites. We're going to listen to The Whistler. Now, The Whistler started in 1942, and so did Suspense. They both began in that year, and they both lasted for a long time. Actually, Suspense was one of the last radio programs to go off the air. I think it was 1963, and then radio drama was resurrected again when Hyman Brown brought back the CBS Mystery Theater. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com, because we want to bring you the best of old-time radio mysteries. And tonight we're going to bring you the best of the best of Dorothy Shay and some great comedy from the 1950s. It was actually done on the Jack Benny Show on TV. If you have any questions, again, just write to Bruce at radiomasterpieces.com. Thanks so much for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. And now just enjoy an hour of wonderful programming.
For an automobile salesman, I have expensive habits. I mean dames. It had been dames as long as I could remember. That's strictly murder. Also, it gets you definitely no place. So this day I was turning over a new leaf. Nothing on my mind but business. Pencil in my hand, the sheet of figures on the desk, figuring out how to sell a million Excelsior 8s, make $1 billion. And someone tapped on the glass. I didn't even look up, just a busy executive. That was again. Now I looked up.
Am I disturbing you?
Was she disturbing me? I got up in a trance and followed her across the showroom floor. It seemed as though I'd never seen anyone walk like that before in all my life.
This is my husband, Mr. Ganlon. Mr. Evans, the sales manager.
How do you do, sir? So she had a husband. He was a little sourpuss runt with a limpy leg about twice her age, dressed like dough. The kind of dough that you could buy Excelsior 8s by the dozens. But I wasn't thinking about that now. I was thinking about her. I was thinking that the best way to guarantee seeing her again was to send them out that door in an Excelsior 8. So I pasted on the big salesman smile, went to town. Now, this is our customs line, Mr. Ganlon, distinctive in appearance. You'll notice the three-tone color effect inside and out, upholstery to match, huh? And the broad, graceful, sweeping lines, a thing of beauty.
What's under the hood?
That's a question that I've been waiting for. Why, the world-famous Excelsior motor, Mr. Ganlon.
Yes. Please, I've never driven in an Excelsior. Perhaps Mr. Evans would take it for a ride.
Oh, now look here, Sylvia.
Gan, please.
All right.
It won't take a minute. Yeah. Try that rear seat, Mr. Ganlon. Find it broad and luxurious. Now, Mrs. Ganlon, if you'd care to sit up here in front, you can see what it'll do.
Thank you.
Hey, you see how it handles, Mr. Ganlon? It's like a baby carriage, eh?
Well, keep your eyes on the road.
I turned the corner on two wheels, explained about the minimum sway being on account of the stabilizers. Well, I got a couple of grunts for that cry. In the mirror, I saw he'd closed his eyes, so I turned to her. I still didn't know if this deal was going to be too easy, but one look at that look in those eyes, and I began to have a rough idea.
What do they call you?
Which they?
Your friends.
Speed. How about you?
Sylvia. Why the speed, Evan?
I like to get places.
I like to go places.
It's the same thing.
Maybe you're right.
Maybe we're both right.
Maybe, Speed. Maybe.
She'd asked for it, I'd have made that Excelsior turn somersault. As it was, I showed her some driving tricks that make your hair stand on end. She loved them. Every once in a while, her eyes met mine, and we clung there just long enough. We knew, both of us, what I was selling, and it wasn't an Excelsior. Now, I can have the car ready for delivery first thing in the morning, Mr. Ganlon. What do you say?
Gan, please.
All right. It'll be all right.
Now, if you'll just sign the order.
I want it now, and I pay cash.
Well, that's fine, Mr. Gemmler. That's just fine. I think you'll find the desk in my office the most convenient.
Is that your office there?
Yes, that's right, Mr. Gemmler. I'll collect all the necessary papers while you're making out the check.
All right.
Well, how did you like it?
Like what?
The car? For a start.
I love it.
You better drive in for a service check as soon as you can.
When?
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Suppose you could manage to be alone?
Yes. I'll be alone.
She She came in the next morning. She was alone. Well, from that day, we went places. We went there fast. But this was, well, it was different. She was different. Different from anything I'd ever known before. And in less than 2 weeks, I knew I didn't care about husbands or excelsiorates or even $1 million. All I cared about was her. And it was the same with her most of the time. That was what was tearing me up. Though it was other times, standoffish, scared. I was screwy. I didn't get it. Well, one day we were down at the beach, as usual lately. We were arguing about it.
Oh, please, Steve, don't.
Oh, what's the matter with Reno? We've got to do something about it someday, haven't we?
Yes, yes.
Well, that's what they got Reno for.
He'll come after me.
I'll let him come. We'll tear up his claim check.
Speed, I want to run along the beach. Come on.
Hey, 33, I'm too old for this stuff. Hey, wait a minute. Anyway, look,
Steve,
look.
You've got to learn to relax.
I lost my roller skates.
I'll get you another pair.
I don't need skates.
Yes, you do.
All right, Sylvia.
Oh.
Look. Listen, Sylvia, cut out the horseplay and quit stalling. I want a decision. One way or another now.
Oh, darling, now you're angry.
I am. I am. It's a screwy deal. You love me, you want to leave him, but you won't.
Oh, but I will, darling. I... See, you see, there's so many things. They're all complicated and mixed up. First, there's my father.
What about him?
Well, you see, my father and Gannon were mining partners in a little town called Phoebe, Arizona, and then there was a cave-in, and my father was killed. Oh, he was such a wonderful man. We were so terribly close.
Oh, that's tough, baby.
Sometimes it's almost as though he were alive. I see him, Steve, in dreams ever so often. I hear him speak. It was 10 years ago.
Oh, what's all this got to do with you and Ganlin?
Stop it! Stop talking me! Can't you just leave me alone? Leave me alone!
Okay, okay, if that's what you want.
Oh. Don't.
Look, baby, I don't know about you, but I'm leaving town tonight. I can't take this any longer. I'm going back now, quit my job and draw my $3 out of the bank and pack a bag. I'm leaving tonight, with you or without
you. Oh, no, Steve, you can't. You can't go without
well,
me.
Well, that's up to you, baby.
Oh, I'm afraid.
Of what?
I don't know.
Well, we'll worry about that later. What about it?
All right. All right, I'll go.
Meet at the usual place at 8 o'clock. I was on time, but even before I got there, I realized she'd never show up. I waited an hour, and then I crossed the street to the apartment where they lived. The seventh floor, 707. She must have been hanging around the door because it opened almost at once. She came out in the hall, closed it behind her. She was scared to death.
Steve, you've got to get away, right away.
Not without you, baby.
No, listen. Listen to me, Speed. I lied to you this afternoon.
No kidding.
I mean, about my father. He wasn't just killed in a cave-in. He was murdered. Ganlin murdered him.
Hmm. So you married Ganlin to kind of show your appreciation.
Yes, I mean...
Look, you don't make sense, baby. Come on, we're going inside.
No, Speed, no!
We're going to settle this once and for all now. In the living room, Ganlin was lying on the couch with his shoes off, his feet propped up. In a chair opposite was a young punk in a tan overcoat who looked like he took the wrong kind of nose drops when he needed courage. He let it be known fairly obvious that he had a gun in his pocket. Ganlin didn't even get up.
Well, Mr. Evans, this is an unexpected pleasure.
I'm afraid it's no pleasure either way. I've come to tell you that your wife is leaving you with me.
Oh? Is she?
Yeah.
What about it, Sylvia? You don't seem to have entirely convinced her, Mr. Evans.
Listen, I don't know exactly what goes on
That's
here.
It's obvious.
But I do know that she's headed straight for a crack-up and that you're at the bottom of it, so she's leaving tonight. Go on, Sylvia, get your things.
All right.
Mr. Evans, I'm not sure you fully appreciate the penalties of stealing a man's wife.
There's divorce courts to handle that, besides other ways, if you're big enough.
Well, since you brought up the question of superior force. All right, Zeke, take him.
Okay, put him up. Hi, funny face.
Oh, gunsels with guns you have, huh?
Sometimes they come in handy, Mr. Evans.
Come on, start walking.
Any particular direction?
Yeah, outside.
All right. All right, you win, Mr. Ganlin.
Take him out and kick him down the stairs. Kick him.
The funk was plenty shaky, and he had the gun jammed right in my back. That's not smart if your guy knows a little judo. I made a quick half turn and fired, but not soon enough. I'd have broken his arm before he could fly again. The gun scooted across the floor somewhere, and I was just thinking it's lucky they soundproof these fancy apartments. It started going off again. I whirled around to see Sylvia with a gun in her hand stalking Gannon like a tigress. He was cowering behind the furniture. She was moving around trying to get a clear shot at him. It took me one good leap to get over there and knock her out cold. There was a bowl of water, some flowers on the table. I threw the flowers on the floor, threw the water on Sylvia. She opened her eyes, looked around.
Oh, Speed, why did you do it?
You're lucky, baby. When you get better at it, they're liable to call it murder. After the gunplay, I thought it would be easy. But when I tried to get her down to the car, she clawed like a wildcat, and I had to clip her again. It was a battle all the way across town till we got to barreling along Highway 99. She knew she'd break her neck if she tried to jump. And all of a sudden, she just went to sleep. I looked over at her sleeping there in the corner, rolled up like a kitten and as innocent as a baby. And I knew I was for it if it killed me. I just have to do the best I could. Now, we'd passed Bakersfield, and I was headed up over the Tehachapi Mountains before she woke up. It was morning.
Oh. Oh. Hello, darling.
Feeling any better, baby?
Oh, yes. I had such a wonderful dream. I was a little girl again. And I was with my father, and he was rowing across a lake. And then...
Then what?
Steve, I lied to you about Gannon. He didn't kill my father. I was wicked to say that, wasn't I?
Oh, you're just a little mixed up, that's all.
Steve?
Yeah?
Where are we going?
We're going to your hometown, baby, Phoebe, Arizona.
Oh.
You like the idea?
I suppose so. Why?
Look, baby, I'm no psychiatrist, but something happened back there when you were a kid. Something to do with the death of your father. It's had you on the merry-go-round ever since. So much so that about 9 hours ago, you tried to kill a man.
I said I was sorry about that, Steve.
Sure, sure, but if you and I are going to make a go of this, I think we ought to do something more besides just saying we feel sorry, don't you?
You make it sound as though you thought I was going to go around killing people for the rest of my life.
All I say is that you're not... Well, you're not going to be very happy until we know the facts about this thing, whatever they are. Until you face the facts, and from then on, we can forget it.
Steve?
Yeah?
I'm terribly hungry, aren't you?
Yeah, I could do with a little something.
Look, there's a place up ahead.
No, okay.
Bus just pulled in.
Yeah, it's one of the regular stops here.
Steve, kiss me.
How's that?
Oh, that's wonderful.
All right, let's go, huh?
Oh, my, what a lot of people.
Ah, those big buses hold a lot of people, baby.
Help! Help! I'm being kidnapped!
Come here.
Help me! Help!
It's all right. It's all right. She's my wife.
Hey, what's going on here?
I'm not. I've never seen him before in my life.
What?
I'm being kidnapped.
Oh, hey, that's no way to treat even your wife, mister.
All right, if you must know, she's crazy. She's
what?
My wife, but she's hopelessly insane.
But I won't kill you.
About 5 minutes later, she snapped out of it. You'd think nothing at all had happened. But I wasn't taking any more chances. I took to the side roads wherever I could, figuring the cops would be on my tail any minute, so we didn't cross the state line until way after midnight. No, it was next morning when I kicked it out of gear at Phoebe, Arizona. There was only one hotel. We registered, adjoining rooms. All the time, I was watching her like a hawk. I didn't need to. Now that we were there, she seemed glad. Now, we'd been in our rooms about 5 minutes when the phone rang. Hello.
Mr. Evans?
Yeah?
Just a moment, Mr. Evans. Mr. Evans? This is San Francisco, operator 23. We've got a long-distance call for you.
Is San Francisco?
Yes, sir. We've been trying to reach you all night. Shall I put your party on now?
All right. Go ahead.
Hello. Evans?
Yeah?
This is Ganlon.
You must have a private eye on your payroll, too, huh?
I know you're an intelligent man, Evans, whatever else you may be. I knew where you'd go. But I want to tell you something. You're getting in deep water. Deeper than you know anything about.
And you hope I'll drown, huh? All right, maybe I will. But I'm still wading in.
I'm coming down there, Evans. In the meantime, keep quiet and keep her quiet. And keep your nose out of things.
What's that supposed to be? A threat?
I'm not threatening you. I'm telling you. For your own good.
Mr. Scanlon, wasn't it?
What? Yeah, he called to give us his blessing.
He's coming down, too, isn't he?
Maybe.
I'm glad, Steve. You just can't know how glad I am.
Yeah, it's going to be real cozy, just the three of us.
You've been cruel to me, Steve.
Who, me?
I've forgiven you, though, you know that.
Why, sure, baby.
I just didn't understand at first, but I understand now why you brought me here, I mean. You're going to find proof that Gan killed my father.
I'll work on that.
I can tell you exactly how it happened.
You said yesterday you were lying.
Oh, don't try to confuse me, Steve. You want to know it, don't you?
Sure. Let's have it.
Well, my father and Gan were tunneling a new shaft in the side of a mountain. They were working alone that day. They'd set a dynamite charge inside the shaft with wires out to the ignition box. The box worked with a plunger, but when my father pushed it down, dynamite didn't go off. He went back inside to find the trouble. While he was in there, Gan pushed down the plunger again. My father was blown to bits.
Just like that, huh?
Don't you believe me?
Hmm. Like I say, I'll work on it.
They'll hang him, won't they?
Hang who?
Ganlon, they'll hang him when you find proof.
If he's guilty, they'll hang him.
You'll prove it, darling. Promise me you will, so they can arrest him when he arrives. You'll do it for your baby, I know. Kiss me, darling.
How's that?
Oh, that's wonderful. That's all I care about. That and seeing Ganlon hanged.
She went to sleep then, just as peaceful as you please, dreaming of Ganlon with a rope around his neck. Well, I found the thing they called the City Hall. Asked to see records on an old man's death. Well, they hemmed and hawed some, and then it came out that half the town was burned down a few years back. The records went up with it. They finally suggested I see an old-timer named Konski who'd been her father's mind foreman at one time or another. Well, I did. He was already waiting for me. He seemed to know what I was after. He was all primed with the answers.
Sure I know, Sylvia. Sweetest, prettiest little kid I ever see all my life.
And of course you knew her father.
Sure I knew.
I guess Sylvia must have been pretty fond of him.
Sure she was crazy about him.
Well, wasn't she?
Maybe. But if she was, she was the only one in this town wasn't glad to see him die.
Look, you don't have to be cagey with me. I'm trying to help Sylvia.
All right. You know what is the best thing you can do?
What?
Get out of town before you make plenty of trouble.
That was that. Well, the next stop was the office of the weekly paper owned, published, printed, and peddled by one guy, a guy named McLean. He seemed to know all about my business, too. Had the files all laid out for me.
Why don't you lay off it, Evans? It's 10 years old and getting buried.
Mind if I look at your files?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. You can see what it says. Mine disaster, premature explosion, accidental death.
Any chance it wasn't accidental?
What do you mean?
Any chance that Ganlon did it?
Not a chance.
He seemed pretty sure.
You ever noticed that gippy leg of his?
Yeah.
Well, that's how he got it. He was in the mine when it happened.
I was getting no place fast, only a suspicion and not a very comfortable one. And I hadn't the faintest idea where to go from here. And I thought of the doctor. There had to be a doc to sign a death certificate. Well, I found out who he was, dug him up, and he looked like the worst bet of the bunch. He was half wacky from the effects of age and a misspent life. Nothing left but his dignity. and the collection of photographs that he insisted on talking about until I wanted to smack him.
Yes, it was my hobby before my eyes went back on me, but those you see on the wall are only a few. Here. Take a look at some of these.
Who are all you people covering up for, Doc?
I beg your pardon.
You heard me.
Young man, you realize that what you've just said constitutes a most serious slur on my professional reputation.
Oh, nuts. Look, I'm trying to help a girl that I'm in love with. Can't anybody understand that?
Take this one, for instance, and notice the contrast. The light and shadow.
Yeah.
I don't suppose you understand the meaning of the term traumatic experience. No, I thought not. The psychic structure of the personality is a very delicate mechanism. For instance, in the case of Sylvia. Now, take her to a competent man in the field, Mr. Evans. I no longer handle such cases.
That's not what I came to you for, and you know it.
I'm afraid I can't help you. Retired some time ago, you see. Now, look at some of these. They're older, of course, but there's still some very good ones among them.
Look, Doc, I don't want to look at pictures. All I want...
Ah, we found one you like, eh? I knew you'd...
It has a date on it, July 14th, 1935. That mean anything to you?
Is that the stalagmite incrustation? If so, it's...
I don't know. It's just some rocks and a hole in the mountain to me, but that date is the date that Sylvia's father was killed.
Give it to me.
No, you don't. No... I'm afraid you're torn it, Doc.
Give it back to me, I said.
Yeah, but the part I got is still enough to show who killed him. I started back to the hotel, but I didn't feel so good. I didn't feel good at all. I asked at the desk if Dan had arrived, but he hadn't, so I went on up to Sylvia's room. She was sitting at the dressing table making up her face. She looked up at me in the mirror.
You know... I can tell by your eyes, you know.
Yes, baby, I know.
And they'll hang him, won't they?
Ganlon? No, baby, he's in the clear.
But he isn't. He can't be. He murdered my father. I know he did. You're lying to me, Steve. You...
Look, take it easy, baby. It's going to be all right. Just let's get it over with, and we can forget it, huh?
Get what over with? You're acting so funny, darling.
Take a look at this picture.
Huh? Oh, that's me, isn't it? When I was a little girl. I'm awfully far away, but I still know it's me. The smoke.
Don't you remember?
Please, Steve, my head's hurting. Don't.
Try to remember.
You're tormenting me. You're trying to hurt me.
That smoke is the explosion, isn't it?
I don't know.
You pushed the plunger.
I don't know.
Remember while your father was inside the shaft. Remember?
Yes, I killed him.
All right, baby, that's all there is to it. You can forget.
I hated him. It's all I live for. It's all I ever dreamed of. See his face bloody and battered. See his body mangled and dirty. I hated him. I hate you. I hate all men. If I could kill every man in the world.
Where did you get that gun, baby?
Out of your overcoat.
Yeah, better put it down.
I tried to kill Ganlon because he knew. Now you know.
Put it down.
It's too late, Speed. Goodbye, darling.
Listen, it's all over now. You were only a kid. I know how he treated you. The whole town covered up for you. They're still covering.
Goodbye.
When the door flew open, I ducked, and then the shots came. When I looked around, Ganlon was lying on the open door, the gun still in his hand. He walked right into it. Well, he must have got in one shot, though. That was enough. She was still breathing when I got to her. But that was about all.
It's all right now. Isn't it, darling?
Sure, baby. Everything's going to be all right.
Kiss me.
Yeah. How's that?
Oh, that's wonderful. But I wasn't so lucky this time, was I?
Not too lucky.
I didn't miss.
No, baby. You didn't miss. Well, anytime you want to buy an Excelsior 8, just come on in and see old Speed Evans. No, I won't tell you my troubles. Dames, that's my trouble. It's been dames, dames, dames as long as I can remember. That's too bad, though. We'd have probably had a couple of kids by now.
Valley 103.1.
And now the Whistler's strange story, Till Death Do Us Part. Norman Grayson was an art dealer, an enterprising young man who usually wore a friendly smile. Only last night, the sale of 6 original German manuscripts to the wealthy Richard Morris had brought him $50,000, enough to make anyone smile. But now the smile was gone, and Norman Grayson wasn't at all pleased with the way things were going. As he alighted from the cable car and walked along Divisadero Street toward the sumptuous funeral parlors of Carter and Duff, 1,000 confused thoughts raced through Grayson's mind. Thoughts that went back to last night at the Morris home on the Heights, where Morris's young and attractive wife had received him in the study.
I hope you'll forgive me for asking you to come all the way out here at this late hour, Mr. Grayson.
There's nothing to forgive. I was glad to come.
It's only because of Richard. He's ill, you know. His heart.
Yes, so I understand.
Oh, but he'll be up and around very soon. Richard's like that. Bounces right back.
Glad to hear that.
The manuscripts, Mr. Grayson, that's all he's been talking about the past few days. He's determined to add them to his collection. I do hope the price will be right.
$35,000, Mrs. Morris.
$35,000?
Mm-hmm.
I see. Well, perhaps I shouldn't say this, Mr. Grayson. I don't suppose it's good business.
What's that, Mrs. Morris?
$35,000. It's really a bargain.
Oh, you think so?
I know so. I know manuscripts, too, Mr. Grayson. I've worked with them for some time. The Winston Galleries. I was there for 5 years. That's where I met Richard. You didn't know that?
No, I had no idea, Mrs. Morris.
Sometimes I think that's why Richard asked me to marry him. Just to have someone around to help with his collection. Oh, that must be Dr. Reed. Come in. Oh, come in, Doctor. Oh,
pardon me, Mrs. Morris. I believe I left my overcoat in. Oh, yes. There it is.
How is Richard?
Slight improvement, I'd say, but still a pretty sick chap.
Oh. Doctor, this is Mr. Grayson, Dr. Reed.
Hello, Doctor.
How are you, Mr. Grayson?
Doctor, about Richard, is there anything
No, if he becomes restless later in the evening and can't sleep,
you might... Yes, the prescription. Same dose as usual, I suppose.
That's right. Call me in the morning. Good night, Mrs. Morris.
Good night, Dr. Reed.
Good night, Mr. Grayson.
Night, Doctor.
Oh, he's a dear. Really worries about Richard as much as I do. Well, Mr. Grayson, shall we go on up and have a chat with Richard? Richard. Richard.
Janice?
Yes, darling. Mr. Grayson is here.
Grayson?
The gentleman with the manuscript. The German manuscript for your collection.
Oh, yes. Manuscript.
Yes, Mr. Grayson and I talked it all over. He's going to sell them to you. Darling, aren't you listening to me?
Mrs. Morris, perhaps we'd better not try.
No, it's quite all right, Mr. Grayson. Here, Richard, let me help you sit up.
What for, Janet?
The check, you have to sign it. It's all made out, everything except the signature, Richard. That's it. That's a good boy. Now, is the pen?
All right.
Oh, that's right. There we are. Ah, that's fine, Richard. Now I'll give the check to Mr. Grayson.
Thank you.
And the manuscripts are all yours. Isn't that wonderful, Richard?
Yes. Janet, a glass of water, please.
Oh, of course, darling. Here's the water. Yeah. And here's something to make you sleep. Doctor's orders. Now I'll be back in a little to look in on you. Good night, Richard.
You didn't know quite what to make of it, did you, Norman? You were puzzled about Mrs. Morris and the way she rushed the sale. And then the check. That puzzled you even more. Downstairs, as you walked towards the front entrance with Mrs. Morris...
Mrs. Morris, the price I gave you on the manuscript was $35,000, but this check is for...
$50,000. Yes. That was the sum my husband intended to pay. We feel it's no more than right. We still consider it a bargain.
Thank you, Mrs. Morris. Of course, I won't refuse it.
Good. You must drop around to see us soon. Perhaps we can have dinner when Richard's up and around again.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. Morris, but I'm flying to New York at the end of the week, and I...
Oh, dear. I had hoped we could see more of each other. We had so much to talk about.
Well, I'm not leaving until Friday.
Dinner tomorrow night, then?
Sounds wonderful.
We'll have cocktails at 6.
I couldn't think of a better time.
Love to have you, Mr. Grayson. Norman, isn't it?
That's right.
I'm Janet. See you tomorrow evening, then.
Tomorrow evening it is, Janet.
When you left the Morris home, you weren't at all quite certain that business in New York was important enough to drag you away by Friday. You could put that off for a while yet. As long as there was someone as attractive and as interesting as Janet Morris in San Francisco. No, business in New York could wait. Early the next morning, you cashed the $50,000 check, then spent the rest of the day roaming around town. Later that afternoon, when you returned to your hotel...
Oh, Mr. Grayson, someone's been calling you all afternoon. Wouldn't leave a message.
No?
A young lady.
No message, huh?
No, sir. Here's your key.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Grayson, you've seen the papers, I suppose.
Hmm? Papers?
Yes, the gentleman you were asking me about several weeks ago. Mr. Morris.
Morris? What about him?
Well, you didn't know. He died this morning. Heart attack.
Yes, it was all there in the evening paper. Richard J. Morris, prominent Bay Area businessman, art collector, dead. You hurried up to your room and began to pack. And then the phone rang.
Hello?
Norman, this is Janet. Janet Morris.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I just read the papers. I'm terribly sorry, Janet. Is there anything I can do?
As a matter of fact, there is. Yes, I'd like to see you, Norman. There are a few things we should discuss about the manuscripts.
Oh? What is there to talk about, Janet?
Don't you know?
All right. I'll come right up.
No, not here at the house. That wouldn't be right. Suppose you meet me in, say, 2 hours from now. I'll be at the funeral parlor making arrangements for Richard. It's under Visadero.
Yeah, I know.
You'll be there, won't you?
Yes. I'll be there.
Good. I wouldn't want you to do anything foolish, like leaving town in a hurry.
Yes, it had been a profitable business deal, hadn't it, Norman? Selling the 6 original German manuscripts to Richard Morris. But less than 18 hours after he signed a check to you for $50,000, Richard Morris is dead of a heart attack. And now his widow, the young, attractive Janet Morris, summons you to see her, and of all places, at a funeral home. When you reach the funeral home, a slender, solemn-faced young man leads you down a long, thickly carpeted corridor toward the rear of the building into a private waiting room. The door closes softly behind you, and you're alone with Janet.
Oh, Norman.
I'm sorry, Janet.
Oh, it's so awful, I just can't believe it. Poor Richard. And to think I let you swindle him out of $50,000.
Look, Janet,
please, don't bother to deny it. The manuscripts are forgeries. I know.
You knew it all the time?
Yes.
Did he?
Of course not. At first he wanted me to take him to Mansfield for appraisal.
Mansfield? Fred Mansfield?
Yes. But I talked Richard out of it. He had a lot of respect for my judgment.
I see.
So no one knows about this but us and the man responsible for the manuscript. They're quite good. Ziegler's work, isn't it? I understand he's back in this country.
Hmm.
I told you yesterday I knew manuscripts. Had to be Ziegler or Klein. By the way, where is Klein these days?
In a Berlin cemetery. He made a mistake. A bad one.
Oh, he was such an ass. Oh, I wish they'd stop that music. I don't like it.
Janet.
Yes?
What are we going to do about the manuscripts?
Well, I could turn the whole matter over to the police, but it would be such a bother. Well, after what's happened, I just want to get away somewhere.
So?
So I think I'll give you the manuscripts. That is, I'll sell them back to you, Norman.
For $50,000?
Yes.
You wouldn't consider the original price, $35,000.
Oh, no, Richard wouldn't like that. I'm afraid I'll have to insist on $50,000. Are you in the market, Norman?
I'll have to think it over.
Well, all right.
Janet.
Yes?
You know, I can't figure you out.
Oh?
I mean about the money. Morris must have left you a fortune. Why should you worry about $50,000?
$50,000 is very important. You see, there's a catch to the fortune. It's tied up in trust. I'm to get only $800 a month.
Oh. That's awfully tough, isn't it?
It is, when one is used to the things I am. Richard planned it that way. My own good, you know. Wasn't that thoughtful of him?
Yeah. So when I came along, you saw your chance to grab off a little pin money, huh? Money that he'd never know you had. That's why you upped the ante from $35,000 to $50,000 on that check.
Yes. Wasn't that thoughtful of me?
You knew it was coming back, the baby. Smart. Very smart.
Norman, people will be arriving soon. I'm afraid I can't talk to you anymore. I'll give you till tomorrow night to think it over.
It's nice of you.
8:00. The house. And Norman.
Yeah?
Don't forget to bring the money.
I'll tie a string around my finger.
Come in. Sorry I took so long. I was taking a nap. The servants are all gone. They're at the funeral parlor.
Touching. Very touching.
Why don't you go into the study? I want to freshen up a bit. Fix yourself a drink.
Thanks. Popular prices, of course.
Norman, you're bitter.
Let's just say I got up on the wrong side of the world this morning.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay, I'm sold. I better go in and fix a drink before the prices change.
I won't be more than 10 minutes, Norman. Make yourself at home.
You stand in the hallway, listening to Janet's footsteps overhead. Then a door closes. Silently, you slip up the stairs, past Janet's room to the far end of the corridor. If only you can get your hands on the manuscripts. A moment later, you step into Richard's room, quickly cross to the desk by the window and begin your search. Minutes pass. Frantically, you continue to look for the manuscripts. Glance at your watch. Janet will be going back downstairs any minute. You need time, Norman, more time. The manuscripts are in the house somewhere. Then... your eyes fall on the nightstand next to the empty bed. The nightstand. And the half dozen bottles of medicine. You pick up the small blue bottle. You remember this one, don't you? Sleeping tablets. You stick them in your pocket. In less than a minute, you're back in the study downstairs.
My, aren't we cheerful?
Why not? I may even go into a soft shoe routine. Want to see it?
Later, perhaps. Oh, you fixed me a drink. How nice.
Here you are, sweetheart.
Thank you. To us, Norman.
Yeah, to us.
Thank you.
know, Janet, it's a funny thing about Ziegler. Seems to pop up in the most unexpected places. I remember the last time I saw him. London. It was right after the Marcus affair. You remember it, don't you, Janet? Janet.
What? What did you say, Norman?
The Marcus affair. The paintings.
Oh, yes. Yes, I seem to remember.
What's the matter, sweetheart? Don't you feel well?
No. I feel fine. Just sleepy, I guess. I suppose it's stuffy here.
Oh. What you need is another drink, huh? Janet.
No. I don't think so. What were you saying about...
Ziegler? Oh, yes. Right after the war,
it won't be long now, will it, Norman? Your voice drones on and on. Janet can hardly keep her eyes open. And then finally she drops off to sleep. You keep talking. Then you get to your feet and walk over to her.
Janet. Oh. Fallen asleep, have you, darling? Don't worry. You haven't got enough to keep you asleep. Too long. Just long enough for me to finish here. Oh, by the way, I hadn't finished telling you how I got the manuscripts, how Klein stole them from Ziegler, and how I had to kill Klein to get them back. Yeah, it was a bad mistake on Klein's part.
You haven't much time now, Norman. The servants may be coming home at any moment. Quickly, you begin a systematic search of the study, and you're in luck. In less than 5 minutes, the manuscripts are tucked away in your inside coat pocket. You leave Janet sleeping peacefully in the chair and slip out the front door. As you stroll down the walk, you toss the bottle of sleeping tablets into the bushes. Then when you reach the gate, you turn, look back at the house.
Ha ha! So long, sweetheart. Sleep tight.
You're quite pleased with the way things have turned out, aren't you, Norman? The money you received from Richard Morris is tucked away in a San Francisco bank. The manuscripts are in the mail for New York. And in a matter of hours now, you'll be on the plane heading east. And you're not too worried about Janet, what she'll do. You've just outsmarted her, that's all. She won't do a thing. She'll take her beating like a good little girl, perhaps look around for another sucker. Then an hour before your plane time, you're about to leave the hotel when there's a knock on the door.
Yes?
Lieutenant Benson, San Francisco Police. You're Grayson?
Yes, what is...
Can I come in? Thanks. Leaving town, Mr. Grayson?
Yes.
You had some sort of a business deal with a gentleman named Richard Morris a couple of days ago, didn't you?
Did I?
An art dealer named Mansfield dropped over to have a little chat with us yesterday. Seems Morris had asked him to check on some German manuscripts you had for sale.
So?
The manuscripts were forgeries, according to Mansfield. And when Morris died, sort of suddenly, well, Mansfield thought he should bring it to our attention.
I don't know what you're talking about, Lieutenant.
You were at the Morris home last night, weren't you?
Okay. I just dropped in to say goodbye, that's all.
You were there the night before Morris died, weren't you? The night you poisoned him because he was going to turn you in for fraud.
Poisoned him? Wait a minute.
Yeah, he was poisoned. Looked just like a heart attack.
Now listen, I didn't poison him. Janet, she must have. Why, of course, that's it. She had everything to gain, don't you see? Money
so
and...
she did it, huh? Then last night, she turns right around and takes some of the stuff herself.
What?
Yeah, the sleeping tablets. It turned out to be poison. She's dead, Grayson. We found the half-empty bottle hidden in some bushes in front of the house. Has some fingerprints on it. Be very interesting to see how they stack up with yours.
Ladies, your attention. There's a thing we must discuss. It's vital and imperative to every one of us. When your man comes home at night, there's just one thing on his mind. He turns down the lights, settles down for the night. I'm romantically inclined, but romance is something that I never get. He's so busy with his television set. I'm lonely and neglected. My home life is a bore. My husband doesn't notice me. He's nuts for Channel 4. No wonder I complain. All my nights go down the drain. Television's tough on love. Since he's been watching wrestling, he's put me on the shelf. You know, I'd like to do a little wrestling myself. But I never get a chance since he's found a new romance. Television's tough on love. We don't go out. We ain't got the time. We're watching movies made in 1929. So we don't dine. Okay, that's fine. But when I'm feeling moody, he's watching Howdy Doody. But when his favorite shows are through, I'm waiting patiently. 'Cause after 12 o'clock, there ain't a thing that he can see. When all the channels sign off, he'll have to come to me. Television's tough on love. He's always watching video. He never watches me. I mustn't interrupt him, for I'm just as quiet as can be. I really hate to squawk, but I've forgotten how to talk. Television's tough on love. He's always playing with his set to get a clearer view. Adjusting this, adjusting that, while I just sit and stew. If he don't change his ways, I'm gonna need adjusting too. Television's tough on love. Don't get a chance to be alone. And day by day our list of friends has grown and grown. They're packed in tight most every night. Well, they just come without permission. We ought to charge admission. Tonight I'm gonna lock the door. I've got a plan in view. I'm gonna take a hatchet and I'll bust that set in two. And with no television, he'll have nothing else to do. And he better treat me right. There'll be no television show. That doggone machine has gotta go. We'll have no television tonight.
I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
Valley Community Radio, 103.1 FM on your radio dial. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.